The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting to order on Tuesday, April 26th. So, just a quick opening remarks. Wow, what an amazing quarter Roger's going to go through the first quarter. We continue to set records. I think it's, you know, when you start thinking about the volume of business that is coming to Port Houston, it's absolutely amazing. And I just want to give a great shout out to our teams at Port Houston, the ILA, the seafarers, everybody, pilots, who continue to drive commerce in our region. You all are doing a great job, and we appreciate everything you do every single day to keep breaking these records. We had some major events that happened in April. On April 8th, we received a Section 204F for the assumption of maintenance of the separable element 1C in the associated agreement. That's huge in the sense that we got that document executed by the Assistant Secretary of the Army, Michael Connor, and also Colonel Tim Bale. They indicated that we will be able to, that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will take responsibility for the maintenance of Segment 1C. And this is a huge deal. It's between Bayport and Barber's Cut. The idea or the key thing here is that it allows us to release an option to Orion Marine for the removal of the abandoned pipeline in the segment, and clears the path for the future procurement for section segment 1C dredging early next year. That also reduces the port's liability by 1/3, which is basically a 50-year liability to dredge and maintain that channel because of the LPP. Amazing effort by our team and the Corps of Engineers to get this done. We really appreciate that. Those dollars that we would have had to pay will go for probably landside investments to help us continue to build going forward. So it's money will be well spent on the land side and not on the dredge side. So the other, I think, part of the equation is just a quick update on dredging for Project 11. Great Lakes dredge and dock commenced the mechanical dredging on Sunday, April 10th in Segment 1A between Bolivar Roads and Redfish. The technical part of the dredging is the ship channel 94 plus 000
yeah.
And between 94 and 98. And we're expected to complete that. Complete the first acceptance section within the next couple of weeks. After the completion and installation of the selected catalytic reduction equipment on the hydraulic dredge, that should arrive early June. We have scheduled a Project 11 dredging kickoff celebration for June 1st in Galveston at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers District Office. The commissioners have been invited along with elected officials and others. This should be the official kickoff of dredging. We should have that new dredge in place.
Yeah, we should have the new dredge there. We have delayed the project so that we could get the emissions reduction with that big cut.
Right. That is the key. The dredge that's coming in is the dredge where we waited to get the equipment on to reduce emissions for sure. Okay. Concludes my remarks. Let's go to number C1, which is the approval of minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Roger, you're up, staff and board.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman, and commissioners, welcome all our guests. Chairman mentioned our cargo volume is across all of our docks and through all of our facilities has increased significantly still through the first quarter. Our container volume, I'll talk about that. I'll leave some of these more details to talk about our other facilities to Jeff when he gives his report. But our container volume is up 23% overall for the first 3 months of this year, over a record year last year, more than 9,000 TEU through March. By far is our largest quarter ever. Let me frame that, 9,000 TEU in one quarter. Do the math, in 2016, huh? 900,000, I'm sorry.
You didn't say it.
900,000 TEUs, sorry, in the first quarter. In 2016 was the first time that we passed 2 million for a year. So that you can tell we're on a pace that is certainly a record volume. And we're having record single-day gate activities at our Barberstead and Bayport terminal. Seems like we're setting records all the time. We've had two records in the past 2 weeks. People are working really hard to make sure that freight is going through our terminal as quickly as possible with the amount of volume that we're having. The combined total of both terminals in a single day, we had 13,625 interchanges in one day.
How many?
13,625 interchanges, interchange for a container in or out or whatever.
8-hour day, 10-hour?
Well, we now open from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., so we've extended that. But, back, I don't know, a year ago, 10,000, 11,000 maybe was a huge day, Jeff, just in general. So we're bumping up against 14,000 TEUs, interchanges. In a day that highlights how much activity we have flowing through our terminal. These growth opportunities that we're having come with challenges that we continue to address in different ways because we got to continue to provide efficient service for our customers, our shipping lines, our truckers, and everybody uses our terminals. We're doing that with acceleration of our capital plan as quickly as we can to handle this unprecedented growth and more to come. We've also recently announced that we'll be opening gates on Saturday, a permanent Saturday gate to better utilize our existing assets. Our customers are asking for this. We've extended gates before in the past, but this Saturday gate is one that not only are we going to do it, we're going to demand that people use it. We're on a campaign to make sure that they use it because we got to utilize these assets that we have for more hours in a week than we're doing it. We can no longer continue being a Monday through Friday operation. So,
what will be the hours on Saturday?
I'll let Jeff go through that, but it's early June is when we're committed to start. So Jeff will hit that. I'm not sure, but I'll just. Jeff will talk about that a little bit more, but we also it's crucial that we do this, and we got commitments from the industry, the shippers, the exporters, the truckers that these gates are going to be utilized. The next thing I just want to mention, it's on the list. We have a speaker today, Dr. Steve Roop with FXX, the freight shuttle. We've recently entered an MOA, I'll call it another MOA with the freight shuttle to pursue these opportunities connected to our container facilities and connecting them to other locations, explore the potential benefits that are out there that we've seen with some of the disruptions we've had in the supply chain, but they include improving air quality on the movement of cargo, reduction of truck miles that are traveled, enhancing intermodal cargo connectivity, and quite frankly, improving some of the throughput capacity of our existing terminals. Those are some of the goals that we're going to look at jointly through an MOA, and Steve will speak more about this here shortly. But this freight shuttle is not anything new to Port Houston. Again, we had an MOA before, and we continue to have to get out of the box and look for solutions and technologies like these that may provide tremendous value and benefit to more efficient freight transportation. You know, one thing that we're looking at specifically is, hey, is this a viable option to West Chambers County? And a quarter of our cargo that goes through our port, one-fourth of our cargo and TEUs comes to or from West Chambers County right now, and it continues to grow. If you hadn't been out there, and some of our commissioners have gone out there, I'd like the opportunity to get more people out there. There's more than 3 million square feet of warehouse space being built right now on spec. And once that's filled, guess what? That's all going to come through Barberstead and Bayport. So it's going to continue to grow. It's going to grow at a rapid pace. So
how many TEUs are coming from over there?
600,000. And we did, for that perspective, we did about 3.5 $5 million last year. So almost a quarter of what we do is going to and from West Chambers County. So I say that to highlight, hey, we've got to continue to look at opportunities to accommodate efficient cargo velocity and throughput through our terminals as we move forward, because it's a new era and it's going to, there's exponential growth that is in demand for movement of containerized cargo through our facilities. And with that, I'll turn it back if there's not any other questions.
Any questions or comments, commissioners? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to thank Commissioner Carlos for the tour that we took last week to see it out. And I just want to say that of all the information that we've been receiving about how this port is going to grow, that just confirmed it with me. When I saw all those warehouses, that is totally going to feed our port. For the commissioners that didn't get to go, I wish you could have been there. And I would suggest that you ask Roger to maybe take y'all out there and let you see it, because it will open your eyes. These warehouses and distribution centers, what brings cargo to our port. And it just tells me that one day we're going to be a major, major port, and we just got to take advantage of it, because the word's out in the industry that ports with land and ports with finances is going to be the ones that succeeds going forward. And I'm very proud of the port and the work that all you guys are doing.
You're here. Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
Well, just to me, I mean, I live out there, and I didn't realize. I mean, I had seen some of the construction, but had not. I didn't realize the extent of the square footage they're going out there. Literally, they're building million square foot spec warehouses that are filling up immediately. One of the really, I thought, interesting parts of the tour was we went to a refrigerated warehouse that had just opened, and they were telling us that, you know, I'd always assumed there's going to be produce such as that, and the owner of the company was there and led us on the tour, and he was telling us that poultry producers were literally beating his door down to get into that warehouse. Which there's so much opportunity for us in that area, but then that leads to, because these guys need reefer places at our port, you know, at the docks. So to me, what the main takeaway was, wow, we've got a lot of work to do infrastructure wise to keep up, because it's here, and It was extremely impressive what's going on out there, but it is going to be a challenge for the port to not be the bottleneck in the future.
So it was very interesting to know who owned the port, those warehouses, and it's just who in the market. I mean, they're all there, and obviously they got 10,000 acres left to develop, and I suspect everybody ultimately will be there. It was very impressive.
If I could add, Mr. Chairman, this is Dean.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was impressed with the scale of that operation. I mean, like Roy said, I mean, they've got 5,000 acres they've already developed, another 10,000. That's the size of Manhattan. I mean, it's huge. And the growth potential is unlimited over there. So I'm all in. We need to start thinking about what we need to do to prepare for the future and get ready for all that cargo, because it's coming.
Absolutely. I think with $1.1 billion of land side investments that we're making right now, we're working on that for sure. And clearly, the deepening the channel is a big part of that as well. And good news is we do have land that we can expand our current terminals on, which is good, compared to a lot of other ports who don't have that. Any other questions or comments? You obviously heard that Commissioner Corgi is online and not in person, so I was going to say that here in a minute, that he was here. Online. So thanks for your comments, Commissioner Gordon.
Sure.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. All right. Well, let's go then to item E, which is public appearances. And Roger already introduced Dr. Steve Root, the CEO of FFX, which is which is freight shuttle. So, Dr. Reed.
Mr. Chairman, Roger, members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to be here. Unique times, and I have to congratulate the Port of Houston for being so forward-looking and out in front of this and almost everything they do. I think the Port of Houston has distinguished itself nationally in terms of its anticipation of growth. And very interesting times, I think you would be the first to agree that we're looking at a tsunami of freight that's likely coming your way. Freight shuttle is a tool, and we think it's a tool that's particularly right for the times. It's a zero-emission system, and, of course, that is incredibly important for stakeholders and the public to embrace an approach that is more environmentally sensitive than perhaps what we've evolved to over time. The freight shuttle also has a long list of other benefits. I've got a little visual here to give you a mental view, if you're not familiar with the freight shuttle, of what it is. It's an automated, autonomous conveyance that uniquely operates on its own infrastructure. And that's kind of our secret sauce, if you will. More roads, more trucks, more trains, I don't think is going to get it done for us. Historically, we've reached kind of a point where we get diminishing returns on roadway expansion. I spent 30 years as a research scientist at the Texas A&M Transportation Institute and developed the freight shuttle in anticipation, like the port, of this crisis that we find ourselves in. It's a unique time with a confluence of some pretty serious events that it's going to take a change in the way we do things to overcome them. And I welcome the opportunity to work with the Port of Houston. We've had long dialogue over the years in understanding how a system like this can help leverage the assets that are in place and move cargo out beyond congestion, maintain that high level of customer service, and do so in a way, importantly, that is a lower cost to your customers. It's not a higher cost. It's not a premium. We actually can move cargo less expensively. And so this visualization is about a two-minute video we put together that's accurate in terms of its engineering and its operations. And I'll kind of narrate it. So I guess it appears on everyone's laptop screen.
Yes, laptop and then on the main screen. So
let's roll that if we can, and I'll describe it. Hopefully the music is muted. Stopping it in this location to kind of describe single vehicles. So in designing the freight shuttle, we had the opportunity to begin with a blank piece of paper. And so I cherry-picked the best features of trucking, the best features of railroad, and I combined them into a unique new vehicle that's got steel wheels like a train but operates with a single unit like a truck. So we get the best of both worlds. We get responsiveness. And at the port, as soon as we drop a box on this system with an overhead crane, it exits the port and goes to an inland facility out beyond congestion. And if we roll forward a little bit now, we'll see sort of the idea is, it's very simple. You know, the idea is to build a system at the container facilities where everything currently happens. You've got ships that come in with large, large volumes of cargo, and for every box, you've got a truck. And they all converge at the water's edge. And what we're talking about is this elevated linkage out beyond congestion to an inland facility. Freight shuttle doesn't care if that inland facility is a mile away or 100 miles away. That's incidental to us, and we'll build it to fit the case at hand. So moving forward again, here just to get the basic points across, everybody recognizes this. This is a generic facility, and in order to accommodate the labor contracts that are in place, our infrastructure is placed well away from the waterside, and we continue to use labor under current contracts to move the boxes from ship side to our facility, which is pictured, we'll take a little closer look of it, at it here in a moment, that is well away from the water. It can be on the container terminal, or it could be in an adjacent facility. That is flexible, and we're certainly having that dialogue with the Port of Houston. Every box can go through the radiological detector. We've had long conversations with USCBP in terms of how they would like to see this operate. So we're going to take a look at our pretty unique infrastructure that's pictured up in the upper right-hand corner. We call that a pinched loop. And if we can roll forward again here for a second, the pinched loop is elevated. We try to take up as small a footprint on the port as possible. And it's called a pinched loop because the vehicles, which can move in forward or reverse because of their design, they come into this facility, stop, and reverse direction up under a series of overhead cranes that exchange the cargo, imports and exports appropriately for the case at hand. This facility can be 3 lanes wide. It could be 4 lanes wide. We could have 2 of these facilities. This one, as it's pictured here, could handle about 2,400 boxes a day. Our main guideway system, which we'll show you in a second, can handle 10,000 a day in each direction. So it's a high-capacity system, but it's a very low-cost system as well. So let's roll forward again. And you'll see after the exchange point, boxes exiting the facility, rather than being stored on the container or adjacent facilities, we'll move this to an inland facility and decongest the port as soon as the cargo comes in. Let's roll forward now again. And as you can see on the highway, we may have overdone this a little bit. my gosh, look at 146 out there.
I recognize it.
Yeah. I don't. No, it's not that.
So our cargo moves unimpeded then. Once it's cleared, it moves unimpeded to an inland facility. We would travel in this application at 40 or 45 miles an hour. You can see that while the Port of Houston is really good at controlling gate congestion, I think you're one of the best in the country in this regard. This wasn't really built for this presentation. There are a lot of ports around the country that have gate congestion that's extensive. So this is not Port of Houston or our view of the port, but this happens. And this is a general solution, I think, for container ports around the country. And we can move to an inland facility that we've depicted here as kind of a cafeteria selection. So let's move to the next phase of this, and we'll kind of look at some of the ways that we interact with the inland facility.
I'm assuming you'd be able to bring back empties?
Yes, sir. Empties or exports to the port as well. One stage here is kind of reversing what we did at the port. That is offloading the box, putting it on a chassis, maybe handing it to a receiving customer, or building a stack at the inland facility. The next location, if we roll around here one more time, is something that I'm particularly excited about. And actually, one of your big customers, Walmart, was at our facility in Bryan last week. The idea of us being able to offload material right into their facility is certainly doable with this system. This is one view of that, where this is actually a value-added kind of facility where we drop a box in, it's cross-docked, or they do assembly or value-added services. So lots of flexibility there. And then the last stage here to kind of wrap this up is we feel like we can interact very effectively with double stack rail, and we can stage and assist the railroads in automating in a chassis-free manner the unloading and the reloading of double stack rail. And we seek to do that somewhere soon. We hope to have some productive conversations with Class 1 railroads so that we can show them that this is a more efficient way to build double stack trains and really juice up their intermodal system in a way that nothing else will. Right now, if you know how this is done, it's pretty manual, it's pretty slow, it's pretty cost intensive. So that's kind of a 20,000 quick view of 20,000 foot quick overview of the freight shuttle and what we've done. This is not fantasy. We built this and tested it. We have a full scale working prototype close at hand, Bryan, Texas, Bryan College Station. You have a standing invitation if you'd like to come up and kick the tires, so to speak, although they are steel. We'd be happy to show you what we accomplished and what our plans are moving forward. We really appreciate the opportunity to continue to explore the freight shuttle at the Port of Houston, see if we can make it fit and position this port globally. I think someone else said it. You guys are going to be a superstar in the port world here, and we would love to be able to help you achieve that. Thank you.
I'm assuming that you'd be able to take this over the channel, over a vast part of the bay.
We're exploring that. We're looking at both over and under as a potential.
Okay, I have to really deep get into those pipelines.
Oh, okay. Great. Any other questions or comments, commissioners? All right. They're exciting.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, our next next speaker is Stephanie Thomas from the Public Citizen. Stephanie, are you online? I think you are, probably.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
We can. Morning.
Great. Well, good morning, Chairman Campo, commissioners. So I'm Dr. Stephanie Thomas. I'm with Public Citizen, and we're part of the Healthy Port Communities Coalition. And today I'd like to talk with you all about a few different things. So first, the Healthy Port Communities Coalition is really looking forward to hearing more about Project 11 updates from the Port and the Army Corps at the community meeting that's going to be held on May 5th. And we really appreciate how Port Houston has so far prioritized clean air in the dredging contracts. And of course, we'd really love to see the Army Corps of Engineers move forward with that similar kind of mindset. We don't want to choke on our success. We need healthy air for every community, especially those most burdened by air pollution. And we really want to see the Army Corps adhere to the TCEQ's recommendations for cleaner equipment. I want to just say that I'm really excited by Dr. Roop and the freight shuttle. We're excited to see what comes out of the MOA. We really love that the port is supporting a Texas-based business that is exploring real solutions for the pollution challenges that our region faces. And we can't rely on endless highway expansions. We really need better solutions for freight mobility. So thank you for looking into that, for exploring that. And then just lastly, I want to ask a question about item J2 on the agenda. So you may be well aware that communities near 610 have experienced significant flooding, and addressing drainage issues are critically important. So I'm wondering if you all can tell us how this investment may improve drainage for the folks in the local neighborhoods there. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Tom, you want to take that question? This is for the entrance.
Sure. This is a project we started back in 2016 with TxDOT. It's the feeder road right as you come into the main gate. And if you've been around here for a long time, it's flooded my whole career here. And so this was just to help with the flooding. The culverts weren't big enough because of when they were built, and so that we put larger culverts. So this is just the final payment of that contract.
What was the total amount of the contract? It was several million dollars,
I think.
It was $900,000.
Yeah.
So this is
exactly 1.43 with TxDOT paid about $200,000.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right, great. Any other questions, comments, commissioners? Are you good, Ms. Dr. Thomas?
She is now.
Okay.
I'm good. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Our next speaker is Kendall David of Goose Creek ISD.
Thank you all so much for having us. You all might be wondering why we're here today. So we are the Goose Creek CIC Community Engagement Team and Administrative Team here today. And we are here because each month we have a committee that meets and goes over a giant staff member of the month, giant student of the month, and a giant alumnus of the month. And this month...
It's not a student here.
No.
A staff member here.
But we have a giant alumnus sitting in this room, Mr. Roger Gunther. Mr. Gunther, you were recognized and nominated by Mr. Stephen Don Carlos, and he sits on the District Safety Education Foundation Board, and he is well in tune with who our giants in the community are. And let me read to you what he has to say. I did have this memorized, but I just had to cross over like four lanes trying to get here on top of the awesome. Excuse me while I read. So you were nominated for being an exemplary administrative leader of a multi-million dollar organization that has a national economic impact of over $800 billion. Your hard work and dedication have not gone unnoticed, and you've been recognized throughout the maritime and business industry. This has led to the pending May induction into the International Maritime Hall of Fame. You remain close to the Baytown community, and you are a true definition of what a Goose Creek giant is. So thank you so much.
The bigger deal in the Hall of Fame.
No, just I'm just very pleased to nominate you for this. We engaged with the school district when I was at the city several years ago about it. One good way to determine the worth of an educational system is to look at its products, and I've always maintained that you're one of our finest examples of a terrific Goose Creek alumni, and we are very, very honored that you, your parents chose to live in Baytown and to for you to go to Goose Creek schools. You've been a great example, I think, for a lot of young people to look at and admire your career, and I think it's high time you got honored for it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Baytown Rotary Club, and just want to say on behalf of the Board of Trustees and our Executive Council, as well as the engagement team, thank you for what you've done, serving our community still to this day, and thank you for having served as an example and a role model for our students that are in our school system now to see that there's no limits on what you can do if you just work hard and continue your education. So congratulations, and we thank you very much for being
here. Thank you.
Y'all come up here and take a picture with Rod.
We'll go right over here with him.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good to see you. Good to see you.
Why y'all scared me when y'all came in?
Now you know why we didn't give you the...
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on.
I mean, we had a plan there.
I was right here. And I think some other folks would probably want to take the same photo, just like that.
Can you show the class? Is there something to show?
Kristen, will you pull it out?
Take it out of the
box. Sorry, not so sorry for the disruption.
The good disruption.
Good, thank you.
Here we go.
Thank you so much.
Perfect, thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Go Gander. Thank you all so much.
Bye.
You're welcome, thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to our next item. Unless there are any questions or comments, anybody else want to congratulate Roger?
Congratulations.
Okay, let's go to item F, or I'm sorry, executive, which is Tom, you're going to take us through.
I am going to take, there's just two items in the, under executive. The first one is to approve the actuarial audit. Every 5 years, we have to do an actuarial evaluation for the Fort's restated retirement plan by state statute. It was presented to the audit committee on April 18th with a clean opinion, and so we take this now and we send it into the state to show that we were we did accomplish this audit. The second one is to adopt the Business Equity Committee charter. This, if you remember, we used to have a Procurement and Small Business Development Task Force. We changed that to Business Equity Committee, so we're just updating the charter to the name and a few changes to the mission statement and things like that. So I ask the commission to approve items F1 and F2.
So moved. Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? All in favor to say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have nothing on business equity today, but we do have the next one will be commercial. So, John, are you up? There you go.
Sir.
Morning.
Morning. Morning, you all. I've got three items for your approval on behalf of the Fort's Commercial Division, but I'd like to just brief you on a couple of things before I get into the agenda items. As Roger had mentioned, and it's been mentioned this morning, March was a strong month by many accounts. And the national port rankings just came out, actually, last month. And I'd like to make you aware of our latest container port ranking. You know, we're experiencing record growth, but container ports on the East Coast grew at a faster pace than we did here in Houston. And as such, carriers actually had expanded ship capacity on the East Coast faster than the Gulf in 2021. And unfortunately for us, Virginia grew at 25% last year, versus our 15%, and as such, they surpassed us in taking our number 6 spot and pushing us down to number 7. On a brighter note, and I'm happy to answer any questions there, but on a brighter note, customer demand, as we all know, is for both the container and general cargo side of the business, is pacing stronger than ever for us. Tenant occupancy at the Turning Basin is above 97%. Driven primarily by an increase in oil and gas production here in the state of Texas. According to Baker Hughes, rig count in Texas is up 64% from where it was last year. There are 346 rigs operating in Texas as of last week, as compared to the same time last year, where there was 211 rigs operational a year ago. Strong drilling activity increases demand for oil country tubular goods, which is basically the steel pipe we see down on the public city docks here at the Turning Basin. And in terms of containers last month, some of you had seen the developments out in Baytown. We've seen some development. Target Stores just started construction on a 340,000 square foot cross dock that's being operated by their service provider, NFI. That's just one example. And Walmart actually announced expansion of their Baytown distribution center by an additional 1 million square feet, bringing their total distribution center space up to over 5 million.
So that's great, great things going on. Regarding promotional engagement to support our business operations, last month we participated in the IHS World Petrochemical Conference, the University of Houston's Port of the Future Conference, which Rich and Tom had had addressed. And we also held our annual customer appreciation event at the Rodeo, which are in collaboration and in local sponsored venues to increase engagement and communication with our external stakeholders. Those are just three examples, three commercial examples, but there were many other more meetings and group events and community-based activities that were held as well. As mentioned, we're requesting approval for three commercial items this month. All three amendments are existing leases and fairly routine in nature. They're here at the Turning Basin. H1, H2, and H3 are all lease amendments here at the Turning Basin. I request approvals for items H1 through H3.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, comments? Just a quick question, John. So have we identified, I mean, was it just, why did Virginia grow so quickly? Have they done anything in particular?
Yeah, well, like I said, just looking at the market, ocean carriers have really deployed a lot more service capacity into the East Coast than they have on the West Coast and the Gulf, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. So the larger ships, more capacity to cover services. And now such, Savannah grew at 20%. Norfolk grew at 25%. It's just a function of capacity and a lot of weather.
But there's some other ports that we actually gained on, but we're still buying because they're bigger on it. So we gained market share like New York, New Jersey, and South Tacoma and all those. We actually gained market share on them, and they're still ahead of us.
That's right. Seattle didn't grow as fast as we did. They grew at 13%. We gained on them. Charleston is still way behind us. They're about 25% behind us. But, there's just dynamics in certain ports around the country.
Welcome to 38% rail. They haven't reached beyond that port. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And can they take the 1,200-foot ships?
Pardon me?
Can they have the largest ships?
Yeah.
Part of the issue, too.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing they got going from them, they got that big Navy operation, so the government keeps that channel dredged.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Virginia?
Virginia.
Yeah, 50 foot.
50 foot.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. We're working on it.
We're working on it. Thank you.
Okay. So, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
All right. And I think we're Nexus Finance, and I think Tim, you're online. Correct.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yep. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioner.
A couple little again.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, you speak up a little.
Is that any better?
Yep.
Yeah.
Super duper. Good morning, everyone. Item I-1 on the agenda this morning is requesting your approval for the 2021 Annual Comprehensive Financial Report. Curtis distributed that to you electronically yesterday, and I believe you have a hard copy at the table this morning as well. Again, this is an almost final version as we administratively integrate the opinion letter, which was reviewed with the audit committee this past Monday, the 18th. That audit opinion letter from our external auditors, BKD LLP, concludes with a clean or unqualified opinion on the financial statements, our P&D fund, and the single audit associated with grant funds. As I said before, the auditors presented to the audit committee last week, and the committee passed a motion recommending approval by the full commission today. With your approval, we will take the final step in closing out 2021 financials and file the ACFR with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality by May 15. And lastly, I'd like to acknowledge the hard work and dedication of Curtis Duncan, our controller, who is there in the room with you today, and the entire accounting team who continue to deliver high-quality, reliable financial statements throughout the year. That's all I had, Chairman. I'm happy to take any questions.
So moved. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Looks good. Great. All in favor, say aye.
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 They have changed this. It used to be the CAFR, now the aquifer. State law changed it and moved that A into the middle and beginning instead of the next letter. I thought that was a very appropriate one by the state. Okay, infrastructure. Rich, you're up.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. How's everybody?
Good.
Good. Before I go to the items, just a couple of clarifications. This meeting on May 5th that was mentioned in one of the calls, that's a meeting that we're restarting an engagement, a community engagement between the Army Corps, ourselves, and communities who always had questions about what's that truck doing up on the berm at the DMPA, mm-hmm. the placement areas and so forth. So we used to do this on an annual basis. It stopped during COVID, so we're starting that again. And so the Army Corps will be sort of foremost, and our environmental and our community relations teams will be there as well. Related to the Harris County flood control, we do have an ongoing conversation with Scott Elmer and Ellen Black on a myriad of topics that flood control is focused on, everything ranging from sediment control in our channels to tunnels and these kinds of ideas. So that dialogue is ongoing. As far as infrastructure goes, we're delivering new space. Barber's Cut 3 North and Bayport 2 South were both delivered ahead of schedule in the last quarter. So that's helping to alleviate a little bit of the operational intensity. And we're adding new capacity, working with operations to find ways to move and increase the velocity of the cargo. And finally, just a reference to the Port of the Future that John mentioned, that conference had over 60 speakers, and it talked about, they talked about innovation and technologies and transportation, zero emission trucks and alternative fuels to sustainability. So it was a really great gathering, and the port sponsored that along with the University of Houston. We have 10 agenda items this month and 6 projects covering a financial request of $3.6 million and 4 items issuing licenses and permits. I'd like to bring your attention to 2 items. One is J5. This is a change order to increase funding for our annual pavement replacement contract at Barber's Cut and Bayport. We typically put in a PO. This year it was $2.7 million worth of money to get projects done. There are more projects to do than that money is covering, and so we'd like to plus it up to do a 6th task order, per se, and also add the amount of $604,000, $233,000 is for plus up to be able to finish the 6th task order, and then $371,000 is for overtime and extra crews to be able to accelerate this work to deliver some of these repairs 5 months early. And so it's a good thing for operations. A lot of potholes out there need to be fixed. And then the vendor, by the way, is 100% small business. And then J6 is a request to approve $1.27 million in wetlands mitigation credits, which enables the port to develop a 64-acre property at Port Road. We call it a U-shaped property. That, again, is needed to enable the port development to accommodate the rapid growth and demand for additional space for logistics and support activities near our container terminals. So with that, I'll ask approval of the 10 items. I think one is a final point.
Yeah,
two,
seven.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, and Commissioner Clinton's going to abstain on the center point ones. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, comments? All in favor to say aye.
Aye.
Aye. One thing I'll mention on infrastructure, next meeting, we're going to look at projects and timing and all that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And we're going to then, if you recall, we have a schedule that shows sort of the budgets and the timing of what our projects are, and they're going to be reported on. I think we're going to probably look at it quarterly rather than monthly, just because it, just timing. But that schedule will come out to the commission. It'll show where we are on our time and where we are on our budget on every project, on every major project that we're working on, so that we can take a look at that at least quarterly.
Right.
And that'll be in the next meeting?
Correct.
Okay, good.
Let me ask you a question. Rich, I heard you say that we authorize overtime for a specific project to get expedited.
Yes.
Are we looking at that on all of our projects?
We're looking at accelerating all of our projects. We've had discussions with, say, McCarthy, Artwork 60. If they can move it forward faster, what's the additional cost? What's the trade-off? And then we're making decisions project by project.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Any other questions? Okay. Thanks, Rich. Move on. Jeff Davis, you are up for operations.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners.
Good morning.
You run late in the agenda. You run the risk of having some of your highlights already highlighted. Roger mentioned the gate activity that we've experienced lately, bumping up on 14,000 gate moves. That's certainly significant. Kudos to our staff for making those things happen. Roger also mentioned volumes, 23% up in TEUs. Big part of that are empty containers. Empty containers were up 76% with us, and that's just our migration over recent years from kind of becoming more of a West Coast model when we trade with Asia more. So instead of sending exports back to Asia at the same pace as we traditionally have in our market's typically been 50-50 exports and imports. Right now we're doing 65% imports, loaded containers, and 35% exports. So the carriers are taking empties back to Asia and not loads because it's just a more lucrative market for them. So our empties are up significantly.
It's lucrative because what? They get more for the container when it's filled as opposed to waiting for it?
Import coming back, if they tell us that there's a great value in sending empties back over there to turn that empty into an import and bring it back to us versus filling it with export, that it takes more time.
Because they have to unload it somewhere else and they'll get to put something else in it quicker.
And just to reiterate, the ocean carriers are limiting those export bookings back to Asia.
Correct.
Which is further challenging some of our dwell issues on our terminal as well. So there's a lot of things moving. It's not just import volume, which is a big deal.
Yes.
So there's a lot of things that are occurring with the supply chain. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, it's
very important.
You're spot on, Roger.
Point that you made.
You already covered most of this anyway, so.
Well, the thing
were you going to give me an award too?
No, I was going to have the marching band come in.
Brad Banker.
They beat us to that.
Go ahead.
Anyway, you mentioned we're bumping up on that almost a million TEUs in the first quarter, but that volume and how we're going to go overtake Norfolk is, hey, we continue to have new services calls. We have a new service scheduled. The first ship we announced that they're coming earlier this year, but the first ship for the TP28 in Maersk will be here next week, and that's going to be a significant player at Bayport. We're going to see a lot of volume from that, as well as MSC is starting to end this too, beginning sometime in May. So these are two significant services. But if we're going to track Norfolk down, this is our path forward. But anyway, general cargo continues to be strong. We're up 152% here. Steel pipe continues to be our big driver here. But things like plywood and general cargo, you can look out this window and see that we've had 15 to 20 ships every day since last August. And that's really exceptional activities here. The container terminals are also continuing to handle a heavy burden of ships. We're operating at max capacity on the quay in both places, as we have at Barber's Cut and Bayport, as we have a queue of 8 to 12 ships almost daily. And, you know, our strategy for fighting into those 8 to 12 ships that are sitting at anchor waiting to come up, we received 3 new ship shore cranes in February at Bayport. And so we've been without that dock while those cranes are getting ready. And following his team and working with BPNC to ready those cranes, and we expect those cranes to be ready. Mate?
Testing starting next week.
Testing starting next week, and that's significant for us. If we're going to knock this queue down, we've got to have those cranes in that berth in the Bayport. We think it's going to be significant. Container dwell continues to be a challenge. You know, import dwell has subsided some. It was 7.5 days versus our historical 3.5 days, so it's been double. It subsided to 6 days, but we're still struggling with container dwell. We're doing some things. We're in the midst of a chassis study right now. We've teamed teamed up with a consultant and we're working on trying to figure out on the appropriate number of chassis in the market and what we can do to improve that. We're also studying what techniques we can deploy to maybe impact well, but more to come on those as those things develop. And I know we talked about volume already, but I can't pass by Barber's Cut without what it did last month. Loaded containers were 39% at Barber's Cut last month. And 39%, that's what we spend all the money on, the concrete for the loaded containers, the RTGs. And to think that that facility went up 39% in 1 month, it's hard to imagine. But our service levels have not been maintained at that facility to our traditional levels. We're 45-minute turn time people, meaning when the truck arrives, he goes and does his move and leaves in 45 minutes. We're over 60 minutes today at Barber's Cut. And that's why Roger mentioned the expanded hours on Saturday. That's why that is so important to us. We have collectively, as a Ford entity, have to get everybody engaged in expanding these hours, because if we continue to try to work 8 to 5, we're just, as these gate moves bump up to 14,000 and then move to 16 and 18,000, we cannot continue to do them 8 to 5. John and his group, everybody in this room has been marketing this Saturday gate. We have to make this work. And as well as the hour that we introduced a couple months ago, that thing has been largely successful. We hear good feedback from the industry. We see it getting used, and we need the Saturday gate to do the same thing. I'm going to move on to the agenda. We've got 10 items on the agenda. I'd like to highlight a couple of them. K1 is the purchase of 2 loaded container handling machines for Barber's Cut. And these units are used by the Ops Division, Ops Group. We largely do swings as we move a container off of one chassis to another chassis with these units. They're kind of like a forklift, except instead of forks, they've got a spreader bar that handles containers on top. One is a new machine, and one is a replacement machine. And I know Roger said over the one it's replaced, and we have a 1995 model at Barber's Cut, and Taylor, their color is maroon. So when it arrived, he immediately had a Spencer, that's a 12th man. And we are retiring it, Roger. Minutes last day.
Take pictures.
The last two items, K9 and K10, a couple of things that we're doing with U.S. Customs. As a Port Authority sponsor, we are responsible for paying for some infrastructure for Customs to do the things that they do. And they this is some IT infrastructure for telecommunications and those sorts of things. And our IT group works with them and is making this happen. We're responsible for that. And the last one is the 559 program. The 559 program, we're asking for $1 million. That's for a couple of years to keep us. When we work extended hours that are not part of Customs normal activity hours, you're required to pay for their services. So like this Saturday gate, we'll pay for their services as part of that, but when their next budget cycle comes through, this will become part of their regular service, and we will no longer reimburse them for that. But the vast majority of these are paid for by the customers. They want to offer openness during off hours. We pay for Customs, and the customer reimburses them. So with that, I ask for approval, your approval of K1 through K10.
So moved. Second. Any questions or comments?
Jeff, so the $1 million budget will include the Saturday, pay for the Saturday gate overtime?
Until October. Their budget cycle comes in October, and they're telling us that the Saturday gate is maintained as part of a regular program, and they staff to regular. When you do things, have normal hours, that's when the user has to pay for it.
So this will get us to October.
This will certainly easily get us to October. This will last for a while, and get us. This is what we need to be, but we'll pay for that Saturday gate for the interim until we get to the next budget year.
If it's successful. I mean, if we have 10 boxes on a Saturday,
it's going to be successful.
It better be successful.
It's going to be successful. I'm letting them know. But you're right.
If it's not successful, they won't pay for it.
And Thomas Father, we have done Saturday gates in the past, and we've done night gates in the past that have not been successful, and they will not Customs will not man those gates unless there's a minimum threshold of activity.
Well, if it's not successful, you won't have to pay it.
Correct.
That's right.
Okay.
But we're going to be successful.
We are going to be, absolutely.
We'll make this Saturday happen.
Okay. Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
No.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. We have nothing on people and nothing on security and emergency operations, technology. Charles Thompson. There's Charles. Is he online?
Yes.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners.
Technology brings you to us.
I am clearly the person behind the curtain in my office down here. We only have one item in the technology division section. It's kind of an interesting time to bring this maintenance agreement for our hosted services through Oracle Public Cloud. It's where our JD Edwards implementation is currently residing today. It's in two locations. One's in Phoenix, Arizona. The other one is in Reston, Virginia. This is an annual cost that we pay. 4 years ago, we decided to not purchase on-premise servers any longer and move to this cloud. And you'll see a continual move to the cloud for those applications and services that can do it, as well as I believe there was a brief discussion around next generation ERP. There's a program that we're in phase 2 of 4. And at the appropriate time, we'll bring additional items back for that to Port Commission. So we asked for that one item for Oracle Public Cloud Services annual cost to be approved.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions? Chair, I'll first say aye.
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 Okay, thank you, Charles. We now will be recessing and going into an executive session. So,
Mr. Chair, go ahead. I'd like to recognize Clint with the Houston Pilots and say to those guys, we appreciate all the flexibility and you guys working hard to help us get these ships in. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Do you want to take a quick break or?
We will, yes. So go ahead and read your stuff.
We'll read it after the break. Or do you want to just?
Let's just read, go into it.
Let's go ahead and
we'll take a break.
That's fine. All right. It's now 10:17 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority, Paris County, will convene a closed meeting as permitted by Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding Port of Houston Authority versus Louis Dreyfus Company, Standard Constructors versus Port of Houston Authority, and then City of Richmond versus Crittison, Adirond Constructors versus Pena, and Texas Government Code, Chapter 2254. Proposed amendments to the agreements for legal services with the AZA law firm at Baker Botts, and then deliberating regarding real estate, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public officers and employees, including deliberation regarding the employment agreement with the executive director of the Port Authority and security-related matters. Court Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
We have Port Commission meeting, so there are several motions, I think, coming out of that meeting.
I move to authorize a change order with Standard Constructors on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Regarding legal expenses, I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with AZA and Baker Botts, LLP, on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the Chief Legal Officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Quite.
I move that the Port Authority approve an amendment to the employment agreement with Roger Gunther on the terms discussed in the executive session, and authorize the chairman and chief legal officer to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Great. Commissioners, any other questions or comments about the meeting or anything on your mind? Okay, great. One reminder, our next meeting is May 24th, and we are going to try to change the July 20th meeting to August 2nd to accommodate commissioner schedules for the summer. So if that's a challenge with anybody, please let us know, and then we'll adjust accordingly. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.